Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and I am glad to be here. Now, we are in the midst of a special edition. We do this often because of the situation and conditions that we find ourselves in the world today. But before we get into that, the special edition is Think Like a Fighter Pilot. We are been talking about that in all kinds of ways and ramifications. But before we do that, let's put out some administrative items before we get started. Okay, so our radio show appears on Red State Talk Radio on the weekends. It's a weekend show. So we're on Red State Talk Radio, both channels, on the Justice Channel. What is that? Used to be the Encore, is that right? The Encore Channel, talking to my audio engineer. 6 p.m. on the Justice or Encore Channel, and we are on 7 p.m. on the main or the Liberty Channel, both Saturdays and Sundays. So we're lots of times there on the weekends. We are also a podcast. You can find Throttle Up Radio Podcast on most podcast platforms. There's a bunch of them, by the way, out there. I will just mention two, but there's a lot more than that. There's iTunes, and then there's Apple Play. Also, you can go to our website, throttleupradio.com, and we have all of the podcasts there. That's a good place to go because we have other things on the website as well. Okay, so, we also have a new book out, so I do want to mention that. The title of the book is The Sonic Warrior: Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer. That's our brand new book. It is available in all of the formats: hardcover, softcover, ebook, and audiobook. And you can buy it anywhere. It is, our publisher is Redemption Press. You can go to the Redemption Press website and purchase it there. Of course, we support that great publisher out of Washington State, and you can also find the book on all of the major bookstore platforms, as well as Amazon, if you wish. Okay, so what are we talking about? We are continuing our discussion, which relates to a number of things that are happening. And let's talk about the entertainment in the publishing world, what's happening there, and then we'll go into other aspects of reality that we are faced with in this day and time on this in this country and on this planet. We are talking about Think Like a Fighter Pilot, and the reason for that is because of the interest in Top Gun. And also, it's something that we do discuss in my new book, The Sonic Warrior. We talk a lot about the human side of things. We're looking at how do humans think, how should they think when they are faced with difficult situations and extreme circumstances and trying to do things that have never been done before. What kind of thinking goes on in the mind of the humans that are performing these activities such that they have been able to achieve mission success? What is it that contributes to mission success? Is there some way that we can extrapolate? Is there some way that we can capture the fundamental concepts that could apply to or does apply to the formula for success? So let me put it this way, and let me frame my argument this way. First and foremost, we're not talking about humans performing casual activities. Okay, now, yes, I get a little bit tired of this because a lot of things that we pick up, a lot of things that we read, a lot of things in the so-called literature would lead one to believe that when humans are engaged in casual activities, that applies across the board to all human activities. Okay, my position is that that is not correct. My position is, respectfully, that that is not true. In order for humans to perform purposeful activities that represent something that is extraordinary, or another way of saying that is, in order for humans to perform high-stakes operations, they need to be able to think in a certain way, and the way that in which they are supposed to think, or the way in which they should think, is not prototypical with respect to the way humans typically think when they are not engaged in purpose in high stakes operations or purposeful activities that have a highly desirable outcome. Okay, now why is that? Why have we not been given enough information about how should humans perform when they are engaged in high stakes operations? Why is it that we don't have a lot of information there? That's a good question. I'm still scratching my head, frankly, because I don't actually know precisely why that is. I think part of it is that it is hard to do, and if we are going to examine or study human activities and human conditions and human cognition with respect to human psychology and philosophy and stuff like that, it is easier for us to just engage ourselves in the examination of humans when they are going about their daily lives in more or less a casual framework. I guess it's just easier to do. I don't know. Maybe it's just hard. In some cases, it is almost impossible to do so. Unless you are actually doing the activity. If you are an observer, there is a limit to which you can actually understand as a observer. And so the observational position comes with it a lot of limitations. Okay. When we are talking about all of this, what I want to do on this show this week is to address ourselves to a couple of key areas here that do relate to doing things that are important, doing things that are meaningful, and taking the lead position in doing these kinds of things. It could be taking the lead position in solving a serious problem with a military activity or a military operation. It could be taking the leadership position when engaged in a business operation that is very important for the survivability of the business unit or the company. It could be all of that stuff. We're talking about high-stakes operations, and we're talking about what is it that we need to understand if, in fact, we are going to take a leadership position in doing such a thing. What do we need to understand about leadership? What do we need to equip ourselves with? Or another way of saying that is, how should we equip ourselves with that which is necessary for us to achieve mission success when we are dealing with a operation that we consider to be high stakes, very important, very difficult to do, however, because we are going outside the norm and we are venturing into areas that are by and large unknown and uncertain. How should we think about that which is necessary to be a leader of this group, a leader of this expedition, a leader of this activity, a leader of this organization? What is it about leadership that we need to understand? Now, this is the whole point of this show. We're going to be talking about it. And why is that? Because when I'm looking out there, and I meet a lot of people in my life. I talk to a lot of people. I discuss things. I work with a publisher. I work with a radio station. I'm really kind of out there in the public domain. I spend a lot of my time, activity, energy in the public domain, and I get to meet a lot of people, and we talk about things that are going on and that are of interest or are important to these people. What exactly is important right now? What's important right now is a couple of things that leads me to embrace this whole idea of leadership. The first thing is, what is going on in the world today? Okay. This is a big question, and it is something that is on the forefront of virtually everybody that I meet. What is going on in the world today? What is the world that I live in? What are the defining characteristics of the world that we find ourselves in? What are the key attributes, and what are the critical operational concerns? And all of that has to be clearly defined and clearly articulated if you want to be a leader, if you want to lead a organization, if you want to be a leader for a particular activity or a particular operation. Those are the kinds of things that are necessary with respect to leadership. All right, so let me rephrase that so that we can really begin to understand exactly what I'm trying to get at. The first and foremost is, what is the activity that we are engaged in? If, in fact, we're doing something. And let's assume for the moment that we want to improve the way that people think, right? We want to improve the way that people deal with the realities of the world that we live in. We want to improve our ability to think critically, notwithstanding anything else, all right? So we are leading the charge now, and we are taking on the responsibility to improve the way our organization thinks, the cognitive side of the organization, right? Let's put it that way. All right. Now, we have purpose and we have activities. We are engaged in a purposeful activity, and we expect to be productive. We expect to achieve something, be meaningful, and something beneficial for ourselves and others. Okay. And ultimately, we want to achieve mission success. That's what we want to. Mission success means that we all benefit. The benefits are very widely distributed across whatever landscape that we have focused on or that we occupy. Okay, so let's spend a little bit of quality time now and talk about this whole idea of leadership. And we're also going to be saying, okay, we're going to also embrace the idea of heroes, of course. We're going to be looking at those inspirational stories about leaders and about heroes, about the value of being a thought leader, taking your ideas forward even under conditions of uncertainty and possible ridicule. It doesn't matter, we're going to do it anyway. So it takes a certain amount of intellectual courage as well. So what are those characteristics and what are those attributes by which a good leader embraces, a good leader employs these attributes, a good leader functions under these ideas, has these characteristics going for him or her? What is it that we need to understand about leadership? So I guess in a sense, this show is all about leadership and how it relates to the leaders that I have been involved with. I have taken a leadership position in a lot of areas. It started out when I was a young fighter pilot. I actually took a leadership position with respect to that community and carried out high-stakes operations so as to improve the overall performance of the community that I was associated with. What was the name of that community? That community was the fighter pilot community that was characterized as Sonic Warriors. What is that? Sonic Warriors, in my generation, we were the first generation Sonic Warriors. So my generation was the first generation of Sonic Warriors that explored the whole idea of performing air combat operations at the speed of sound. We explored that whole idea. There were enormous challenges, and there were all kinds of places in which we did not believe that we were going to be successful, but nevertheless, we were successful. what were the characteristics that enabled us to achieve success, to enable us to achieve mission success. I'm going to name a few, and then we're going to be listening to something from Jordan Peterson that has that also contributes to this idea, this body of knowledge. The first order of business here is that it's an internal belief system. Okay, you can't really be a good leader unless you truly believe in what you're doing. You believe that what I or we are doing is extremely important and beneficial. And if we don't do it, there are going to be dire circumstances or consequences from not doing something. All right, so the first and foremost is a firm belief, a conviction that we actually can succeed, we can be successful because this activity or this operation or this mission is extremely important that we do it, and mission success is vital. It is vital to the whole organization. It will impact a large number of people. And so the first order of business is belief in ourselves, belief in that whatever we are doing has a higher purpose. It is beneficial for us. It is beneficial for humankind that we do such a thing. The second order of business is, with respect to leadership, is intellectual courage. We are going to go out there on a limb, okay? We are going to put ourselves out there. We're going to put ourselves, in many cases, in the public eye. We're going to put ourselves out there. We're not going to hide amongst the bushes. We're not going to hide and be one of thousands of people in an organization and not make any waves. We're not going to do that. We are going to make waves. We are going to announce ourselves. We are going to get out there. We are going to be courageous. We are going to, because we find it necessary for the purpose that by which we are living this life, our life's purpose is to do this, and so we are going to put ourselves out there, and we are going to be courageous in our efforts going forward in performing this high-stakes operation. Now, I want to just take a little bit of time here to listen, if we can, to listen to something that Jordan Peterson is saying about leadership, and this is all part of what we're trying to get at. So let's also listen to what Jordan Peterson has to say, and then we'll pick up from there, and we'll further our discussion of what are the key ideas behind this idea that we call leadership. All right, so let's listen to this. It is, the title of it is, Your Job is Not to Motivate People. Jordan Peterson explains.
A leader is someone who knows where he or she is going. Well, that'd be the first thing, is like, how are you going to lead unless you have a destination? Okay, well, a destination implies an ethic. And then you need to be able to communicate that. And you communicate your destination with a story. If I want to motivate people, and that's not the right way to think about it, you know, because you shouldn't want to motivate people. That's management idiot speak, that is. What you should do is figure out something that's worth doing, right? That you really think is worth doing. Something that you would actually commit a substantial proportion of your life to. And you should have deep reasons for pursuing it. And then if you're a leader, well, first of all, you have that established. But the second is that you can communicate that. Okay, and then you communicate that in a manner that also appeals to others, other people's sense of purpose. And so you'd say to someone, like, if I wanted to move forward with you on an enterprise, I would have to say, well, here's the purpose of the enterprise, and here's the reasons that it's not only eminently justifiable, but more justifiable than anything else we could be doing at the same time. And then I'd have to say, well, here's what's in it for me, and here's what's in it for you. And here's why the two of us together can further the enterprise and further what's in it for you and further for what's in it for me. And then you have a situation there that Piaget, Jean Piaget, the developmental psychologist, called an equilibrated state. So an equilibrated state is a situation that's set up by two or more people where everyone is participating in the state voluntarily. So when he got that, he derived that notion in part by looking at how children set up games. So if children are going to set up a pretend game, what they do is they negotiate a little narrative to begin with. It's almost like they generate a little play. And they assign everyone their parts, and then they manifest the play, and that's how they think. But everyone has to accept their part voluntarily, right? Or the game won't continue. Now, Piaget's ethical analytic claim, was that a game everyone plays voluntarily is more sustainable and productive than one that people have to be forced to play. And that was his fundamental distinction between the utility of freedom versus the utility of tyranny. Because you could say, well, the authoritarians win. Do this or else. That's a way of organizing a society. But Piaget's claim was the enforcement costs are so high that the free society will outcompete the authoritarian society across time. Now, if you're going to set up an organization, you can set it up on authoritarian lines. But then you're basically compelling people to perform with punishment and fear. It's better to motivate them positively. And the way you do that is say, look, here's the goal. Here's your role. Here's what this will add to your life practically and in terms of, say, significant engagement and involvement. And then if you can do that, people will, you know, with certain other preconditions in place, competence, for example, and a certain amount of conscientiousness, then people will participate in the game voluntarily. You don't have to overlord them. If you have any experience in the world at all, in complex processes, you know that that's the optimal circumstances under which to engage with other people. It's like, hey, we're all in the same boat. We're going somewhere interesting. Everyone's got a role to play. We're all in this together. And it's working out for each of us as well. Now, there's a corollary to that, which is an interesting one. So imagine this. So let's say you have your organization and you have your goals and you're out to do something worthwhile and you can tell a good story about that. So you've got people on board. Now, you really want to get people on board. And so now you've got two choices. You could tell people, go home and spend 4 or 5 hours and formulate a career plan about how you're going to contribute to this organization. Okay? Or you could say, no, you go home and you formulate a plan for your life that includes your job at this organization as a subset. All right? And then you run, imagine you do that with 100 people in each group. Then you run those people in a head-to-head competition for a year to see who's most productive. The answer? The people who formulated a plan for their life. They're 10% more productive. So you can gain a 10% increment in corporate-level productivity by having your people write out a plan for their life. We have a program like that called Future Authoring online that thousands of people have done now that increased the probability that university students would stay in university by 30%. So, and that's part of the narrative issue. It's like what you want from your employees is, well, you want them to be doing something useful with their life that they're engaged in, because, like, if they can't do that for their life, what the hell makes you think they're going to do that for your organization? And then you want them to see how working for you serves their higher order purpose. And if it doesn't, because maybe they can't formulate that integrated hierarchical relationship, well, then they should find another job, right? Because that isn't the job for them. If your job is running at cross purposes with your life, how the hell are you going to be motivated? You're not. At least you're going to be stymied constantly by the internal contradiction. So imagine what you're trying to do is you're trying to get everyone pointing in the same direction. And I don't mean by eliminating all diversity of opinion or anything like that. It's like the overall organization has a point, and then everyone within that organization has their point, but they're integrated within that overarching coherent narrative. That's the purpose of leadership. And to make that work at every level of the organization. That's what you want to do. It's very difficult, but you build a stellar organization if you do that. A company often produces a mission statement sort of as a side effect of a bunch of other things it's doing, and that doesn't work. It means that it's mostly hand-waving, and it makes employees very cynical if it's hand-waving. And it's definitely the case that at the upper echelons of complex organizations, the people who are running the organizations have to know what they're doing and why. And maximizing profit in the next quarter so that their bonuses are larger is not a good strategy. It's not even a good strategy if you want to maximize profits in the next quarter and make sure your bonus is larger. And it's a catastrophic medium to long-term strategy. These words that are bandied about, like vision and leadership, you can drill down into them very hard and start to make some sense out of them if you're willing to grapple with them at the level of detail. And I do a lot of that in this book, because a lot of it is about orienting yourself in your life. And I mean, so here's something, for example. We know that, imagine that you have your employees write out a business plan for their own development, right? So the plan would be, how can I become a better employee? And then you have half your employees do that. And the other half, you have write out a different plan, which is, how can I put my life together properly? And then you wait a year and you measure the performance of the two groups. Is the people who make the life plan outperform the people who make the business plan? And that's really quite a stunning finding, really. It's not what you'd expect. And what it means is that if you're going to be effective at work, then you should, first of all, be effective in your life. And even more importantly, if you have a vision for the direction of your life and your job is serving that purpose, then instantly your job becomes motivating. Because you might be sitting there and thinking, well, why am I doing this repetitive and rather dull task with these people that I'm not particularly interested in? You know, because every job has its maintenance element. It's like, oh yes, it's connected to this goal and this goal. It's like, and those goals are really worthwhile. People are motivated when they're undertaking an act that's associated with a goal that they desire. And our understanding of that psychologically is very deep. We know the circuitry. We know the neurochemicals. We know the neurophysiology. And so there isn't any positive emotion without forward movement towards a desired goal. And there isn't any motivation without that positive emotion. So that's all, you know, vision, leadership, they sound like sort of impractical, metaphysical concepts that are only vaguely related to the practicalities of performance. And that's wrong. They're concrete, vital, definable, and you ignore them at your peril, both personally and socially.
Okay, so good discussion on leadership. And from a practical standpoint, I would say that as a general rule, I think that Jordan Peterson has always useful and often compelling information to pass on to us. If we want to spend a little bit of time on considering these issues. All right, with respect to leadership, if we are in fact going to perform or going to engage ourselves in a high-stakes operation, what is the first thing that we need to do? My position is this, and I'm going to kind of take a radical position here. This is not common. This is not prototypical. My position is rather radical. First and foremost, and by the way, and Jordan Peterson did allude to this, so I'm not completely gone off my rocker. I think maybe a lot of people might even think that. But I haven't completely gone off my rocker, because Jordan Peterson talked about what is your life's plan first before you even engage yourself in a business plan. My position is similar to that. First and foremost, if we are, or if we expect, or even if we might be involved in some high-stakes operation, the first order of business is let's get our thinking house in order. We come into this world, this is my view, and it's a very radical view. We come into this world assuming something that might be convenient for us to believe, but it is not true. We come into this world assuming that thinking or human cognition kind of is a spontaneous occurring thing. It is more or less random, and it is not all that well directed, and the process by which we think doesn't have to be considered too much, because we are preoccupied by the daily activities that we find ourselves in. My position is completely different than that. First and foremost, we have a brain, we have a mind, our mind occupies a mind space, we have a cognitive system that has to be paid attention to. It has to be maintained, it has to be nurtured, it has to be put in some kind of a organization with respect to how it is to operate. In other words, with respect to thinking, how should I think? That is the key question here. The operative phrase is this: how should I think about the state of the world? How should I think about actually performing activities under these conditions that we find ourselves in? Will it be easy? Will it be difficult? Will people often say to us that it will be impossible? In my efforts, in my life, and I'll go back to the time where I was a fighter pilot, an early supersonic fighter pilot, many of the things that we were doing were thought to be impossible. It cannot be done. You cannot actually do these kinds of things at the velocities that can be achieved in these particular airborne vehicles. You can't do these kinds of things. You might just as well give up because it's impossible. We did not subscribe to that defeatist attitude. Our position was that actually was one of optimism. If we are going to engage ourselves and improve, even optimize our ability to think in this time and place on planet Earth, when we are performing a purposeful activity, we should first and foremost be optimistic that we can do such a thing, and we are going to be of the position of the belief that we can achieve even under these conditions. We can achieve under these conditions because we have figured out how we should think. There is enough information out there now in the course of human events in this time and place on planet Earth. There's enough information out there that can give us a firm and clear idea of how we should think under these conditions and under these circumstances. I've got one more audio clip to play. I'm talking to my audio engineer. And okay, we will listen to this other audio clip again from Jordan Peterson. The title of it is The Importance of Character in Leadership. So we'll end the show with this. This is good stuff that supports this whole idea of leadership. Let's do that.
I've talked to lots of business people about leadership, and there's a literature on leadership, but it's not a good literature. It's pretty shallow, partly because it's not that easy to define leadership, and partly because there are different, you know, people have different temperaments, and different temperaments can be leaders. They just do it in different ways. Now, there's something in common about being a leader, though, and I would say one is that if you're an actual leader, you actually know where you're going, right? Because what are you going to do, lead people in circles? It's like maybe they'll follow you, but you're not a leader, you're just a charlatan. So you have to know where you're going, and then you have to be able to communicate that, and then people have to trust you, so you actually have to be honest, because people aren't that stupid, at least not for a long period of time. And then where you're going has to have some value, because otherwise, why would anyone want to go along with you? And then you might say, well, what are the attributes then that make you a leader? And I would say, well, they're characterological, fundamentally. And this is not naive optimism or casual moralizing. It has nothing to do with that. You know, we know, for example, that conscientiousness, the personality trait, is a good predictor of long-term success in most occupations, not all, but most, and that one of the things that's associated with conscientiousness is that people keep their word, they're trustworthy. And that's certainly one element of a leader, especially across any reasonable amount of time. You have to be able to trust the person. They can even be harsh, right? It doesn't matter, because you can see harsh leaders and kind leaders. But as long as they do what they say they will do, then you can follow them, and you know that the future payoff is secure, something like that. So the idea that characterological development is more important to leadership than being a firstborn, that's a very crucial psychological realization, that it's characterological development that makes you favored of God. You know, and I do think we've forgotten this in many ways, because there isn't a lot of emphasis in our education system on characterological development. And that's very, very surprising to me. I think maybe it's partly because in our fractured society, we can't agree on what constitutes a reasonable characterological goal. So we just throw up our hands and don't educate our kids to any degree at all, especially in schools, about what an admirable person is like, or even let them know that, well, maybe you should actually try to be one, you know, that that's actually the most important possible thing that you could learn, right? So, and I also think, and I think this is laid out very thoroughly in the biblical stories as well, is that if there are enough people who are admirable, then things work. And if there aren't, then things are terrible. You get wiped out. You remember when Abraham is bargaining with God with regards to Sodom and Gomorrah, he asks God to save the city if there's like 40 admirable people, right? Respectable. But let's say admirable, right? I don't want to say good, because good is being corrupted in some sense by casual usage. I mean admirable, noble people, right? I think Abraham bargains God down to like 10. If there's 10 of them in the city won't be destroyed. And that's not very many in a city. So there's an interesting idea there, which is that there doesn't have to be that many people in a group who have their act together. But zero is the wrong number. And if it's zero, then we're seriously in trouble. And I think that goes along with the idea of the Pareto principle in economics too, which is that it's a small minority of people who do most of the productive work in any given domain. So a small number of properly behaving people might have enough of an impact to keep everything moving, and that might actually be true, but it can't fall below some crucial level.
And I do think that we're in some danger of allowing it to fall below some crucial level, because our society seems to be at war in some ways against the idea of the individual and individual character per se. And I think that's absolutely, catastrophic. That's part of the reason that I'm doing these biblical lectures. I think that I've known for a long time that the moral presuppositions of a culture are instantiated in its stories. They're not instantiated in its explicit philosophy. There might be a layer of explicit philosophy, and of course there is in the West, and a layer of explicit law, but underneath that there are stories. And there isn't anything under the stories except maybe behavior. That's so implicit, it doesn't even actually count. It's not a cognitive operation. And so these are the stories that are underneath our culture. So there better be something to them. That's what we hope. But more importantly, maybe we shouldn't toss them away without knowing what they mean, because if we toss them away, then we are throwing everything that we depend on away, as far as I can tell, and we will pay for it. We'll pay for it individually because we'll be weak. You know, because if you're not firm in your convictions, then someone else who's firm in their convictions, you're their puppet, like instantly. And then you're also the puppet of your own doubts, right? Because unless you have convictions, you're going to generate doubts like mad, because everyone does. And then the doubts will win, and you'll be paralyzed, because there'll be, you know, 50% of you moving forward and 50% of you frozen stiff, and that'll be enough just to lodge you in place.
Okay, so that's another great discussion of this whole idea that we're trying to talk about, we're trying to put forward on this show. The whole idea of leadership, the whole idea of characteristics and the attributes of being a effective leader and taking on that responsibility. Now, here's the other thing to consider. Leaders often emerge from unexpected places. They are, by and large, not placed there by some, you might say, some higher authority. They often come up through the ranks, and they emerge in unexpected ways. In my experience, we'll go back to the story now behind the Top Gun Maverick movie. There is a story behind that. Jordan Peterson was talking about the power of story. That is what is at the foundation of any culture, that is at the foundation of any discipline, actually, is the story behind it. There is, in fact, a story behind aviation, as there is a story behind other disciplines. In my world, I come from the world of aviation, there is a sequence of stories that starts off with the Wright brothers and moves forward in time. But there is a sequence of stories that we need to be aware of. The story that I have been involved with is this whole arena that we often called close-in air combat. There are amazing stories and a major storyline behind that. And why did it go away? How did we recover? How did we improve upon it? Where is it today? The reason that it exists at all is because we remember the stories and we move those stories forward from generation to generation. And we never forgot the stories. One of the great mechanisms by which we have told this story is the Top Gun movies. The two Top Gun movies is, in fact, part of this story. And there are other mechanisms, by the way, there's other books, there's other videos, there's other movies, but the story continues. It hasn't been forgotten. And that ought to be a lesson for all of us as we go forward. What is our story? What is the story behind what we are trying to do? And let us capture that in terms of the cognitive characteristics like intellectual courage, intellectual curiosity, and openness to new ideas, and the ability to think in a positive way. The process by which we can be and can maintain this spirit of optimism, this spirit of achievement we are going to achieve, notwithstanding the fact that we may encounter obstacles along the way. But we are, in fact, going to be optimistic. We are going to keep a positive outlook. In our particular case, as humans occupying planet Earth, let us still remain optimistic that goodness will prevail. We will get out of this because we believe, to the depth of our soul, we believe that goodness will prevail, and we will all be greeting each other on the other side of this thing in a positive, effective, and mutually beneficial way. Okay, I guess this is the end of talking to my audio engineer, and this is a end of another Throttle Up Radio show where we're approaching the end here. Yes, we are. Yes. Okay. Well, that's it for another week. Thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week.